Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for growing engineering teams. As always, this episode is brought to you by AgilityFeet.com, providers of technical staffing and software development services in Latin America for clients globally. We all know that AI can write code, but it's not great at architecting a system, making product decisions, or iterating based on what your customers actually need. BuilderPods by AgilityFeet combine the best of both worlds. Senior human engineering experience and cutting-edge AI tooling. This combination of experienced teams and AI-native workflows is built to ship high-quality and valuable software faster than ever before, at a reasonable price and using talent in the North American time zones. It's time to meet your BuilderPod. Each of our BuilderPods are a small, senior, AI-powered nearshore team that builds fast without the bloat. Reserve a dedicated pod for your next product launch, Skunkworks project, or proof of concept. Each pod has particular expertise and experience, but they can all work across many tech stacks and industries. For a fixed low price, you get two core team members dedicated to your success. And in addition to AI tooling, that core team can tap into the rest of AgilityFeet's experienced human talent for roles like UX, design, DevOps, and QA. Because these teams are built to ship fast, we only require a two-week initial commitment, and you can keep extending the team as long as you need. This allows you to go from interest to launch in days with no lengthy procurement process and lots of opportunities to iterate on customer feedback. Software development has changed, and at AgilityFeet, we have adapted. Yes, it's true that AI tools make coding faster, but the hard parts haven't gone away of building cohesive and beautiful applications that your users will love and which you can scale your business around. And that's exactly where BuilderPods shine. Learn more by visiting agilityfeet.com. Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Syme, CEO and founder of AgilityFeet. I'm really pleased to share today's episode with you. Andrea Phillips is a senior web developer in our team at AgilityFeet and WebRTC Ventures. And today she's going to share with us how she's doing agentic development. Andrea is from Costa Rica and was one of our original team members, which means that she and I have been working together for almost 15 years now. In that time, she's worked with a wide variety of clients in just about any industry that you can imagine. If your team is new to agentic development, then you're going to see a real-world example of how to do it in this episode, and you'll hear a lot of great insight from Andrea based on her experiences. So welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, Andrea.
Hi, Aaron. Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
So, Andrea, I wanted to start by asking, what got you interested in agentic development, and how would you describe what that means?
I guess for me, it was just the natural flow that it was going to go. I find AI fascinating. I love it. It's making our lives a lot easier in some ways, not everything, but it's great. What got me interested? I don't know. It's the natural flow of how things, I guess, have proceeded, I'm going to say.
The kind of natural progression of where the technology is right now, for sure.
Yeah.
And you've been definitely an early adopter of it in our team. Yeah. And so I know you've been experimenting with this for quite a while. So that's why I'm excited to have you here, because on the one hand, I know that you are an enthusiast for this, and excited to explore it and to share that with people. But I also know you take a very realistic approach to it based on, you know, all the experiences that you've had with a wide range of different clients and projects and stuff. So you've got a lot of, a really healthy perspective, I think, around that. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of hype around AI-driven software development right now, right? And I know you've told me stories before of like people you know who are using AI to build important projects for their company, but they didn't understand the basics of some software development practices like source code control. So let's, because we're going to talk a little bit about like vibe coding and what I would describe as like building responsibly with agentic development, What do you see as the difference between vibe coding and doing responsible agentic development?
Okay. Well, vibe coding, for me, most of vibe coding happens from people that are non-technical. And I worry that they don't really know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So they just give a prompt to an AI and yeah, they're super smart right now. And they can come up with this beautiful design and semi-working applications and they can wow everybody. But in reality, there are a lot of loopholes and security gaps behind mm-hmm. them. Responsible would be, yeah, like we do it. We take care of the database. We use GitHub. We take care of security level, row level security. All of the
building
gaps.
Proper testing, all
proper
of that.
Proper testing,
yeah.
Proper structuring, the architecture, everything mm-hmm. that goes into an application, you know? It's fantastic, the ability to just give out a prompt and have something that wows you.
Right.
But that's not, for me, the reality of how things should be.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. I mean, I think back to like early in my career as a software developer, a very long time ago that excitement of like the first time building, you know, learning like HTML and JavaScript and realizing, oh, there's so much I can do with this. This is so cool. But obviously in the years after that, I learned there's a whole, you know, a major difference between being able to put together, you know, like a relatively simple website and then something that is a production ready, scalable app for the enterprise or that a business can really depend on, right? And, you know, I had a conversation with someone recently, a friend of a friend at a social event who, you know, asked what I do and I described what we do and he was like, oh, you know, well, you know, AI is destroying your jobs, right? Like I'm building my own apps now. And it was, you know, I was like, well, tell me about what you're building, right?
Yeah.
And he was having fun, right? And that's cool that he gets to do that in the same way that we were excited when we first started our career at building web apps and seeing something, you know, beautiful show up in a browser, right? And he's experiencing that enjoyment in a way that he couldn't have before because of AI tools. But there's still a huge leap between what he's doing in personal projects or static website creation and what we would do in like our TC Ventures group with a video yeah. app that has to be scaled across media servers and all that sort of thing. So I think that, you know, we want to take a very responsible and realistic view of this, take advantage of this technology, but also recognize that it's about augmentation of engineering talent, not replacement, because you can vibe code, you know, demos and side projects. And there's a lot of value in non-technical people being able to do that now. But as I think we'll see through this conversation, engineering experience like you've built up is still needed to do this responsibly and in a scalable production ready application. So let's, you know, a key component of this and the way you do this, I know, is like spec driven development. So let's start with that. And, you know, just give, before we get into doing some demos, give us a little quick description of what spec driven development means from your perspective.
For me, it's having a workflow, something, gating what you want, how you want it done, and knowing what to expect, what the outcome will be. So spec-driven development, you write the PRD. What's a PRD? The product requirements document, right? Mm-hmm. So in that one, you write what you're building, why, who you're building it for. So that's like a global view of what you're building. It could be a feature, it could be a complete application, it could be a feature, right? Mm-hmm. Then with that, you write the tech spec. That one has how you're gonna build it. The architecture, database, servers, how it's gonna scale, if it needs to scale. And from that, you write the epics that are like the big groups of work that needs to be done.
High level features, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then the tasks that are little chunks of work, just like we do it, little chunks of work defined with a scope, with a definition of done, tests, and everything. So a developer, AI or not AI, can take that task and implement it with a complete context of what it he's building, right? And I think like that's important. I treat AI agents as I would any of my coworkers. They need the context. They need to know how they're gonna build it. There has to be, you know, some grounding of what the rules of the game are, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't do that, then AI is going to build whatever he thinks he needs in order to get the task done. It could use any database, Mongo or Supabase or AWS, or it, because it's just going to try and build to complete it, right? But you need to ground it. You need to define how you want things done, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you've used a phrase before this that I like too, that you said, without having a clear scope through that spec, then, you know, a task that you give the AI is basically just a wish, okay, right? You know, talk about that a little bit and how that affects sort of the way you communicate with the AI as well as kind of your team.
Yeah, it's a prompt. A prompt is a wish. If you don't define it, if you don't say, I want this done like this and this and that, and this is what we are building at the end, and this is the outcome that I want, then it's a wish. It's ephemeral, I'm going to say. I don't know how to
use that. Right, yeah.
It's the AI. It's gonna build it, but it's you're wishing that it's gonna build what you want. If you don't tell it, there's no way.
I mean, a classic problem we've faced in software development for a long time, right? Where if our users, if our business customer, you know, if our client, you know, just tells us, I'd like this kind of app, right? But they don't give us any details on it. Then just like the AI, you know, we as developers, we're going to put together something but it'll be based on our vision of what they meant by that, right? So the spec gives us those details to move beyond, you know, a wish of what we might want, but actually something that matches what the client has in mind, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, I'm working with AI tools. We're the clients, right? And in a client type of role in many ways. Mm-hmm. Now, there's another phrase. I think you told me you learned about this from one of our clients actually, and I want you to explain the simulating the implementation and kind of in asking the AI to simulate the implementation of what it's building to see where it might hit friction before it actually even creates code. Talk a little bit about what that means.
Yeah, you went. And it was a client that told me, I learned a lot from them. I asked the architect, I gave it the role of an architect, and I tell it to simulate the plan and the implementation and what friction points we might run into. So it's like a pre-mortem technically, but right? So instead of writing all the code and, you know, seeing afterwards that we need to fix this because there was a friction point there, we catch it before, so now it takes one prompt to fix, not a whole sprint afterwards.
Right.
Right. So we can do that now. Like, you know, it's planning, it's seeing ahead, it's seeing what could go wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like what, you know, we would have done in the past and should still do in most cases too, where like before you start building the application, the technical team, maybe with the customer as well, but like, you know, you sit down and you say, okay, we need to build this application. What are the things that we need to think about? What could go wrong with it? What happens, you know, if it fails? What happens if we get a lot more users than we ever expected and we have to scale more quickly then, right? And thinking through those types of like scenario analysis, basically, because then it lets us decide, okay, this is a risk that, you know, there's a high risk of this, so we need to build this into the architecture right away. Maybe this other thing is a lower risk, lower impact, and so we can defer that and do that in a future sprint. You know, that sort of thinking that software architectural teams used to do, we can also and still should do, but we can now also use the AI as a partner in that brainstorming, right? Because even the AI, we can't assume that even if we give it a really good spec, that the AI is going to think of everything in its first run too, right? No. How many times have any of us been doing a prompt, whether it's for code or, you know, some other purpose, and you know, the AI gives you something back and you say, okay, yeah, but what about this? And you get that answer from the AI. So, oh, that's a really good point, right? The AI thinks that right. way too, in a way, right?
You're completely right. Good catch.
Good catch, exactly. Good yeah. catch. Hey, I feel like AI now too. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Andrea, I have a lot of questions for you today, but before we get to those, let's go ahead and jump into a demo of how you like to configure your agentic team, right? And for those of you listening to the audio version only of this podcast, you'll be able to also see the video and Andrea's screen as she demos this by going to YouTube or Spotify for this. We'll have the video version up there as well.
Okay, so this is, I do things and it was chaotic for me. I need control and I need visibility. So it was chaotic for me to just have 10 different terminals working on two different things at the same time and jumping between the developer and the PM, because I do give them the agents, I give them roles and I give them personality and I give them names and, you know, like a,
I see some football player names in there, in fact, in your agents.
See, this one's funny because
I can tell who you might be rooting for in the World Cup right now.
Yeah. Well, no, this one, Jane created them. The PM can spawn new agents and we'll mm-hmm. see it here. But yeah, so I have Mario, he's a product owner and PM because I bundle them together in this case. It has a personality, it knows the rules and how to work. We have a prompt here because we're going to create a web-based soccer trivia because we're in the World Cup. So I'm going to give this team the same prompt as I'm going to give Claude in a separate one. And we will see how they do it.
So what we're looking at right now is Hive, where you have a collection of agents that are basically taking on different typical software development roles. You said Mario is a combination of a project manager and a product owner type of role. And then you've got some other agents here, Neymar, Xavi, Zidane, Jane, right? So they're like software development roles or?
They're software developer roles, yeah. We have, yeah, Mario, the PM, the two developers that I already spawned up, and Mario will spawn up, spawn a new code reviewer, and he knows the flow, so he's gonna create the PRD, then the tech spec, we're gonna go check it, because we need to check it, you need the human there to catch anything. We'll probably do it really fast, so we might not catch everything. And then he will create the epics and the tasks and assign them to the devs. The devs will implement them, give them to the code reviewer. Code reviewer will approve or ask for changes and go back and forth if that happens. And Mario has permission to merge in this case. Normally I would do it myself, right?
So what we're seeing scrolling through in the window here, so you gave a prompt about building this World Cup trivia application. And we're seeing in Hive all of the different users. So like you said, you don't have to flip between a bunch of terminals. Hive lets you kind of look across those agents, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So Mario is filling in some of the requirements based on the prompt that you created. What are we looking at here in the screen now?
Yeah, he's asking me about the stack. What should we be using? I said, yeah, let's go with React Express and SQLite. Mm-hmm. The identity for demo purposes, because we're not going to set up, you know, login authentication and everything. I'm just going to say nickname only. How about the content? So what questions it should be asking? Just a mix of 2026 and history questions about the World Cup. And submit. And we'll see what it does. And in the meantime, and this is going to go super fast. We have it already set up here. We're going to give the same prompt to a separate Claude agent, but without the whole structure. So I'm not going to give it the structure and the tech spec and the PRD prompt. So he's going to build it super fast.
So we've got a little bit of a competition going here now between your agentic developers running with a more of a spec-driven development approach where you've given more tech details and specifications behind the scene. Mario, the PM agent, is able to ask you questions and you're able to give it feedback. So that's what we're seeing on the right-hand window. And on the left-hand, we're looking at just Claude, more of a vibe coding approach where you've given a short one paragraph wish, shall we say, of what you want this application to be. And we're just going to let Claude go just with that smaller amount of instructions and see what happens, basically. Mm-hmm, so we'll get a little real world demo here, the differences potentially between vibe coding and a more formal spec driven agentic development approach.
Correct. And the spec driven is going to take longer. Like, we know that it's going to take longer, but it's going to be like more robust and stronger. The vibe coded one, it's going to be super fast.
Right.
And I have here like the empty repo. So whenever it starts doing the PRD and the spec, we can read them and go over them.
Let's give it a little bit of time, we'll talk through a couple of other questions, and then we'll come back and check on how this is going. So let's talk a little bit more about that team of agents. We touched on this, but hear a little bit more from you about how you built that team, why it's critical. You know, you have distinct agents for PMs, product owners, devs, code reviewer tasks. Talk a little bit about those roles. Why is it critical for engineering managers to keep these agents separate from each other rather than kind of having one continuous chat where you sort of ask like a single agent to do everything, essentially?
Because they have different focus. They have different instructions and they're not biased. Like, for example, I can't give, well, you can technically, but you shouldn't give a developer the responsibility to do or to check its own work. It's biased. Right. It wrote it. It already knows. So if you give it to another agent with a different session, fresh context, it's going to catch much more bugs or issues that might arise. The PM has a different idea in its head. It's about how it's going to assign the tasks, what has a priority, what feature should be built next or first, or, you know. So they all have different perspectives, and that's what I think it makes it better.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, no, I agree. One of the things I really like about this approach is it speaks to one of the fears that I've had around agentic development. And maybe this is just based on, let's call it career trauma that I had early in my career as a software developer, where there were some projects that I worked on where I was kind of coming in after what
we used to call like a cowboy developer, where and cleaning up after them. And what I mean by a cowboy developer is somebody who, you know, it was a project, an important business critical project that only one developer had worked on. They had done everything around it in terms of the architecture, such as it was, the development, the testing. They even kind of played like a product owner type of role for themselves. And so it became incredibly dependent on one person. And I've seen multiple scenarios of this in my career. And even if that person is brilliant, and some of these people I'm thinking of were brilliant in many ways, it's still just one voice in the room, right? And so not only do you have a risk of what happens if that person goes on vacation or gets hit by a bus, but you just don't have diversity of opinion. So even if they're brilliant, it's still only their ideas that are happening, only and their blind spots are going to be accentuated by that, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of my fears with AI-driven development and agentic development is that people might get, you know, I hear people talk about like one person billion-dollar companies, and that's definitely an exception to the rule in the my opinion. Things. Yeah, and one of the problems with that is it goes back down to this, like, you know, only having one voice in the room and the dangers of that in terms of having a really well done creative application, thinking outside of the box, bouncing ideas back and forth.
Bouncing ideas, humans. Yeah.
Super important. Mm-hmm. So we still want to have that at the human level, but by having these agent personas separately in there, you are kind of like pitting them against each other.
Yeah.
You're simulating that same thing, that same response. Yeah. And it's beneficial, right? Because if an agent is a code reviewer, it's going to think a little bit differently than if it's the developer. And across those roles. So yeah, I really like that aspect of this style of agentic development where you do call out those roles separately. One of the other things too that you know, many developers struggle with is like the discipline of writing tests. And so you said that like AI-driven testing provides like grounding for your work.
Provides, yeah.
So talk a little bit about that, like code quality, and about how your relationship with testing has changed as you've gotten into agentic development.
I used to hate testing. Hated writing tests. Like, I couldn't wrap my head around what to write, how to test it, how it didn't make sense to my head. I don't know, for some reason.
Yeah.
But now, since I don't have to write them, I just check them. I absolutely love them. And it grounds me. Like, I know I can trust AI a little bit more, because I know that if something breaks, I'm going to know. I'm going to see.
Right.
I'm going to get a hint, right? I'm not blinded by what this feature here could be doing to this bug's work here. And I love it. But I used to hate it.
I mean, when test-driven development, you know, 15, 20 years ago was kind of just becoming a thing, there was a lot of resistance from many developers and still is, I'm sure, from many developers to doing that style of development, because it felt kind of tedious and it didn't feel like it wasn't the part of software development that we as engineers enjoy, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that AI can help us do that part and sort of automate it, take out a lot of the tedium of it.
Yeah.
It brings in the joy from this. It's cool. Like hearing you say, like, you used to hate it, now you love testing as a result.
I love it now. Yeah. No, and it gives me some reassurance that everything's going to be fine. We have the tests. If something goes wrong, we can check it. We know where it is, what's happening. And I think it's important. That's something that vibe coding, probably they won't do it, right?
Right.
they'll do the first pass, and we'll see if it did some tests. I don't think so, because it wasn't asked, right? And it doesn't have.
Even if it put in some testing, it's there's been no human input to that, right? So it was, mm-hmm. you know, you gave just a relatively short paragraph prompt to yeah. Claude in that, and we'll see what it comes up with in a minute. But yeah, it doesn't have any guidance from you of whether that's the sort of details that you were looking for. Now, staying on the coding side of it for a moment, one of those agents that you've set up, I believe you said, was specifically around doing code review. Mm-hmm. So what's been your lessons in that? How does having an AI-based code reviewer agent enforce like acceptance criteria standard? Does it do it more strictly than a human might have, you know, than you would have as an individual or you know?
Yeah, because it has the complete scope of the whole project, so it can check mm-hmm. again where friction might be, if tests are passing, it knows what pieces this particular PR is touching. It has the definition of done, how to test mm-hmm. it from a task, you know, so it's defined, it knows what it needs to do. For us, like if you go and review a PR in GitHub, for example, you have what changed and you can see, you know, the lines that were modified. Mm-hmm. And it might look great, the changes that you're seeing, but if in our head, we have to hold the whole code, right?
Right.
To know that that particular, I don't know, function or method that we're calling is referenced somewhere else, and that now it's modified to take in two parameters, and there are other places that it's being called that it only takes one, so it's going to break. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, in general, the AI can hold more in its head than we can at the same time, right? And it can go through more loops of thinking it through. Yeah. So this is one area that you know, like reviewing code or analyzing a legacy system where AI can be a real boon to us, a major help is that it can think through, it can yeah. sort of look at that full, say, legacy code system, put it all into, you know, hold it all in its head a little bit more coherently than we can. And so run some different scenarios and have a, you know, a little different,
because we're humans,
perhaps more comprehensive. Yeah.
Yeah. We're humans. Like there's no way for us to hold each and every line of code all of the time in our heads.
Right. exactly.
If we build we build the systems from the ground up, and so we know the code back and forth, but still, like, sometimes we wrote something a year ago and we don't remember, and we're touching it now, and boom, that's where things break. Oh, I didn't remember. That's where right. AI comes in and helps us, you know, go through the whole flow, see where the pain points are, check them. Tests, if we wrote it a year ago, tests are there. If we break it, right. we'll see it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so it's a great example of how AI can augment the things that we're not good at, or, you know, that we're not going to be as good at as the AI, and give us the space to work on the more creative tasks. So how are our agents doing? Let's check in on them.
Let's check in. Okay. It just made an index.html.
So what we're looking at right now is what was vibe coded with a one paragraph basically to Claude.
Mm-hmm. And what it did was an index.html, mm-hmm. single file. Mm-hmm. From the looks, it looks okay. It asks the questions, what trophy do World Cup winners lift? FIFA World Cup trophy? Yeah. How many World Cups has Germany won? I have no idea.
Two, I think.
Four. Which country won the 2018 World Cup? France,
wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it's working, right?
Yeah.
It's asking questions. It keeps the score.
That one's Morocco, I think. Which African nation reached the 2022 semifinals? Morocco.
Okay,
Yes.
Morocco.
All right.
How
So
many
this is a
people?
pretty good looking game that we've
Yeah.
gotten from the Vibe Coder. And based on my knowledge of World Cup trivia anyways, it's asking good questions and knows the correct answers. And we're having a little bit of fun with it. So this, Vibe Coding gives us something cool here, right?
I just okay. So I wanted to finish it to know. Okay, so it has the leaderboard, and I can play again. Okay, so let's say this one. Sorry, but this is an index.html file,
Right.
right?
Yeah, we've got a single page HTML JavaScript website, I presume. Nothing else
If we
to it,
were to
perhaps.
deploy this and there was another user running it in their computer, it still works. Let's say this one's real, but there were no leaders. So it won't work for production, right?
Right. It's
There's
completely ephemeral. It's it's just what's done within that browser session, completely ignorant of other users playing the game.
correct. And
Yeah.
security-wise, I mean, it's all in local storage, probably. Let's
Right.
see.
We could probably just look up the answers in the JavaScript, right?
So let's see. Yeah, because it's no, okay, not local storage, session storage, but yeah, we'll see. Or we can see the code probably, and it could be easily hackable and
Yeah,
manipulated, right?
exactly. So fun game for a demo purpose. If you were trying to show somebody, hey, let's build a World Cup trivia app, or if you're just using this for personal use and you want to practice some trivia, then yeah, this is a this this works. Vibe coding is great, right? But
But if you wanted to have this production, like I imagine the users, when they vibe code something, they want to take it into the world and have their
Right,
family and
right.
friends try it.
Yeah.
This
You're
is
going to
not
go
going to
and try
work.
and make money off this, or even worse, you're going to turn this into like a betting app where the answers are given away in the JavaScript code.
Correct.
That would be
And if, yeah,
awful.
it would be awful. Like, but if you don't know, if you're not technical, you say, "Ay, wow, this is amazing. It looks good. The
Right.
colors are
I'm done.
great.
The code's
I'm
80%
done."
done.
Exactly. And how do I put it? Oh, I'll deploy it. Okay, perfect. You deploy the index.html file, but then you go and give it to your family, and they're like, "Okay, but I have 20 points. Where are my
Right,
points?" And like,
why
"No,
am
I
I not
have
on the leaderboard? Yeah,
no. What's going on?
no data boy, no
No,
database. Yeah, no
no
retention of this
database, no
information across
retention, no
users.
nothing. Nothing. The other
So
one still
fun for
won't.
what it is, but not complete.
No,
How
not
are
functional.
our agents doing on the more spec-driven application?
Our agents are still going. Let's take a look at, okay, it's not this one. Sorry. This one's the one that I did yesterday, just in case they took a little bit longer. But they have a server, they have a client, it's they have a database, index, scores, seeds of questions. So they're doing the work. This one's going to be
This is looking
more
more like a real application. This is
correct, it's more
there's a there's a
robust.
whole file structure to it. It's not a single HTML file. Yeah.
It's I don't see the tests yet, but I'm sure they're gonna come. Oh, see, it has a tests. See, it has tests, leaderboards. So yeah, it's gonna take longer, but it's gonna be better. It's gonna be stronger. It's gonna, like, I'm sure I could take this into, I don't know, deploy it into production. And yeah, I don't know if 5,000 people could play it, but at least
Right.
the leaderboard is going to stick.
You're building something here with the agents that is at least the foundation for what you can take to production, right? It may still not be like a one-shot prompt or a one-shot spec.
No.
You're still going to go through iterations of this. You're still going to want to do things that I mean, that frankly like slow down the life cycle of the software in a good way, meaning like, okay, let's get a few versions of this out. Let's now take it to users. Let's get some feedback from users. Let's have some people play the game. Let's see what problems they run into, just like we would have done in the past, right? So yeah. We're not building a whole company in a weekend still. There's still intentional time delays between the work. But it's allowing us to build an application that it still very quick, faster than
very
we used
quickly.
To, see, right?
See.
For sure.
Super.
But also in a way that is more responsible agentic development that we can take to production. So while we let that run a little bit longer before we see the output of it, let's talk a little bit more about like keeping humans in the loop. In the software development life cycle, even though we have AI now, how much can you automate, and how much should humans stay in the loop in this type of work?
For coding, at least, I think code syntax AI has it covered better than us. It already knows what and how it should be doing things, but the complete decision tree of what needs to be done and the creativity behind it.
Yeah, the creativity.
Humans can do, we have to stay there. And not only like as to what to do, but what to expect and how to decisions. We need to make the decisions. It has to be a human. Right.
The creative decisions, as well as like the architectural review, like as you said, AI has the syntax down better than any of us ever have or ever could.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And a beauty of that is that, you know, while maybe, you know, I'm a Ruby on Rails developer, if I want to start building applications in React, making a transition like that from one tech stack to another is much easier now than it would have been in the past. And that's awesome. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But we still need to have technical expertise in order to judge the architecture that it's coming up with, to help think through problems in that, kind of like we talked about in sort of running a simulation, doing that with the AI, as well as keeping the creativity part in there is super important from the humans, because we know that like left to its own devices in any sort of prompt, AI essentially like wants to please us, right? It wants to give us the most likely answer to make us happy. That's what it's trained to do.
Yeah.
And so in terms of building applications, that kind of means like running to the average, right? Building a like mediocre application that's like everything else out there that is likely to please you, but may not actually be all that innovative or creative. So we still have to drive it and be heavily involved in the process.
Yeah, we have to use our heads to imagine what's coming, what can be done to push the limits. We have to be the ones that do that. Not AI is not going to do it. It doesn't have that drive.
Yeah.
To go after bigger, better. It's going to do what it's asked to be done. But
what it's asked to be done and what it's been trained on, the examples it's been trained on. Exactly.
Yeah.
And no amount of like just burning tokens is going to overcome that. There still needs to be humans in the loop for that.
We have to imagine bigger, better things. Can it be done, and experiment and try it and fail again and until we figure it out. But it's us that drive the process, for me at least. It's us that drive the process. And it's what makes it good and fun, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And speaking of failures, you know, if you try to go too far with this, you can absolutely have some big public failures. And so I think it's worth kind of calling out, you know, mentioning like what's been going on with Meta, the owners of Facebook, in recent news, as we're recording this in June of 2026, Meta recently has been an unfortunate example of what may be going wrong when companies rely too heavily on agentic development. So the Pragmatic Engineer site and podcast, excellent podcast by Gurgly, wrote an interesting blog post earlier this month entitled "Why is Meta in destroying its engineering organization?" and talked about what is being described as the most embarrassing outage in Meta history. And so if you haven't heard about this, the kind of the quick summary is that on May 30th, a bunch of high profile Instagram accounts were hacked with a very, very basic security loophole. Basically, AI agents who were being given authority to do essentially all the coding, take it to production, very little human involvement, had not properly built in two-factor authentication or any kind of identity verification. And so there was this loophole that hackers found that if you wanted to claim ownership of someone else's Instagram account, all you had to do was, like, I guess, go to their customer service to give an agent a random email address to for them to send a code to. And that could be your email address. It doesn't have to be an address that was associated with the real profile. So you get a code to your email address for someone else's Instagram account, give that back to the agent, and now it says, cool, it's your Instagram account, right? Mm-hmm. And it was a bug, an obvious security flaw, a bug that was written by AI code. And because, according to these reports, that the Meta security team had been absolutely gutted in layoffs and reassigning of engineers, labeling tasks, there weren't enough senior staff left in the security team to catch a really like basic error like this, right? So it's a major problem for Meta and a major warning sign for agentic development. And I think, but also, this wasn't exactly unintentional, you could say, because the philosophy, at least up until this point, there's some signs in things Zuckerberg has said in internal memos in the last few days, even, that indicate maybe they're rethinking some of their approach. But at least up until now, their approach has been that, well, sure, agents can break things and deploy them to production, but we're willing to take that risk because agents can also fix it so fast that it's okay, right? But that doesn't seem to be working out great so far.
It wasn't so fast. The bug was there since February. How many accounts got hacked? And we know 30 high profile, but the damage is already done. And it was
exactly
right. Yeah. Is it worth it? Not checking? Like, got your security team. What can go wrong there?
Yeah. Yeah, no. This was not caught by a code review agent or a testing agent. This was caught by real users, including some really, really high profile Instagram users who lost access to their account. So yeah, reputational damage is a real thing too to your brand from going too far with agentic development. What you're modeling here is simulating essentially a team for you of PMs and developers but you're still involved as the human in the loop in that you still have the technical expertise to review what they're doing. And then if this were a real world project that we were doing right now, like you would with our clients, other people on the team that you're working with, they may be doing similar structures for their part of the code, or your agents may be collaborating with each other, but you're still going to go through human review, human DevOps and security testing and before it gets deployed to production, right?
Yeah.
And yes, that means that, project lifecycle doesn't get compressed to hours. You still have humans in the loop, but it's worth it in order these assurances.
If you want a production ready application, you have to do it. Or else,
exactly.
Yeah, you could get hacked, and I mean, I worry so much about security, like with the vibe coding and how we could get all exposed, because there isn't anything baked into them, and they're so pretty and so shiny that we all go in and put our email address and our passwords and give them all the information they want. Right? Without knowing if in the background we're just giving away our information.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah.
They look great, but we don't know. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, and along those lines, it's worth pointing out that, you know, when you're doing agentic or when you're working with agents, even outside of the software development context, how important it is that you think about what information you're giving to those agents, what instructions you give those agents around security and what it can and can't do. You know, if you're using a Claude bot or a Hermes or something like that as an agent, you know, how you sandbox that and make sure that it, you know, it only has enough tools and access to do what it needs to do, but not, yeah, you know, access to go drain your bank account or something. Correct. Like that, right?
Your browser permissions with your Amazon account on it. And
just, right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I don't want a one-click purchases happening from my agent.
I just needed more memory, so I just ordered it.
Right. Exactly. Now, speaking of managing costs, as you set up these agents for your team, do you always use the same LLM, the same model for each of the agents, or do you vary that based on the purposes?
I vary them depending on the purpose. I use the bigger, stronger models to think and to brainstorm and to create the PRDs and to define the tasks. And after everything's defined and they know exactly what they need to do, I can use even the smallest model, cheaper one, because it already has everything written down and spec'd. So they don't even need to think. And it, again, yeah, the code has been baked into them since forever, so they know how to do it. So I don't spend my golden tokens in in development, but in the thinking roles, yeah, I do use different models for different tasks. Yeah. And yeah,
well, that makes sense.
Yeah, if everything's defined, there's nothing. They don't need to think about anything. They just need to write it, right?
Right,
everything's
exactly
been gone through and reviewed and proposed. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Just like we've said in software development for a long time that, you know, the quality of our output cannot be measured in lines of code. You know, the number of lines of code you write does not necessarily make a better application. We could say the same now with AI-driven development that, you know, the amount of tokens you burn or the amount of money you spend on tokens is not a direct correlation to like the quality of your work or the best way to do that work, right? So use the expensive models for the high thinking tasks, and use some less expensive models for the more tedium, you know, automation tasks.
Correct.
Speaking of automation, I know you've said before that if you don't know how to do something by hand first, then you shouldn't be handing it off to an agent until you know how to do it yourself first. Mm-hmm. And that's whether we're talking about coding tasks or user story development or test plans. How do you know, and what would you recommend like to engineering managers thinking about doing this for their teams? When do you know that a manual process is ready to be turned over and automated by an agent?
Basically, when you run it X amount of times and you know that the output is what you want. You can, you know, you run it once. Okay, this is not perfect. So you change the prompt. Change the prompt. Okay, better. And then again. And then you try it again with a different project. It gives out the good output. A different project. It works. Okay, perfect. Now you burn it, and now you know that the output is going to be as expected, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, again, it's if you don't run it by hand, if you don't inspect it and see what it's doing, you're wishing again.
Right. Exactly. And so by learning how to do it manually yourself first, you have learned enough about the output that even though, you know, we're talking about generative AI, so the output is never going to be exactly the same from one run to another. It's not deterministic, but still, you know enough to be able to review that output, to know what it should be producing, what best practices are, and then, you know, it's safe to automate that process.
To automate it, yeah.
Yeah. You've got multiple, in your setup, you've got multiple development agents going that might be working against the same code base. How do you handle like backlog management and having developers run in parallel?
I use the same flow that we as developers use. I have a board. This might be a little control-ish of me. I have to see and have to know what they're doing. Right. I hate it when they're like, okay, here's the list, and they just start, and I don't know what they're doing, where they're at, what they're working on. Right.
Right.
Very DM of me. but yeah, I use the boards. I created my own just because I wanted to be AI first. Mm-hmm. But I wanted a board, like a UI visible board that I could read and see.
Yeah.
So I did that one, and that's where they all write their tasks and they define it. You can use it. You can use Linear. You can use Twilio or even Jira with an MCP. It doesn't matter. They're all the same. And mine is like super basic. It's just that I built it that so I can tweak it to whatever my head comes up for next time.
Yeah.
The PM can see the task list. They can move them up and down by priority and just assign it to different agents. If they can work in parallel, like this is a small app, so I don't think they're doing it. They can work in work trees. That way they won't step on each other, no conflicts, no drama. If there were two agents working in the same branch, you know, there's only one branch that they can be done at the same time. It would be a mess, and committing would be a mess. So work trees for agents that work in parallel, and as long as they're not working in the front end, both of them, if one is front end and the other one's back end, it's separate, so they can do it.
Yeah, basically the same way we manage it with human developers.
Same way. It's going to treat them the same way. Exactly the same way. Tasks small enough that you can do them in a little amount of time. So you don't have this big, huge code reviews later, you know?
Right.
Same thing. It's the same thing.
Well, speaking of our agents, how are our agents doing on the code? Let's go take a look.
So there's code. Everything it created, the documentation, the PRD, the application, the servers. I think the one that it created today, it's much more stronger. It has tests. So if we can see, it has an API. So the UI looks better. Let's skip this one to Ryan. Let's play it. It's who won the World Cup held in Germany. France. Italy. Okay, so I like it UI wise, like it has a degradado and it has some movement. Questions are probably going
to
be the
England
same.
Is the answer to this question. Diego Maradona scored his hand of God against England. Yeah. So in this version that we're seeing created by the agents, we do have a cleaner interface, as you said. We have a stronger architecture behind it, tests being developed. And database and some, you've intentionally not asked it to build in a lot of security in this one, but it looks really clean. If we were non-technical people and we sort of compared the vibe coded one versus this one visually, we would see differences for sure, but they might be close enough that we would, without knowing any better, we'd look at just the top level UI and say, oh, those are both 90% done. That's awesome, right? When in reality, what's behind the scenes, what the agents have developed for you here with more of your more detailed specs and security concerns and everything else, built into it is a much more comprehensive application.
So this one has a confetti and everything.
That's right. Confetti drop when you finish. Yeah. Definitely a nicer UI than the vibe coded one.
Yeah, it has data consistency. If we go to the other, here. Okay. Because I haven't submitted the score.
Oh yeah, but now we're seeing the leaderboard working across different runs of the application. Which is something the Vibe Coded app did not do as a single page HTML page.
Correct. No, it has. I tried to enter without giving it a name, and it gave me an error. No, this one's better.
Yeah,
I like it. I
love it.
Colors and everything. Yeah, we would have to inspect it better, like with more time to see.
For sure. But yeah, looking at the difference between these two.
Yeah,
undoubtedly the agents did a nicer visual job as well as a better technical job. And we've got something here that could be the foundation of going to production. I like my odds in this app. I have to say, I'm feeling pretty good about my World Cup trivia.
See,
Answering these. So I want you to deploy this because I'm going to put myself at the top of the leaderboard.
I will.
But let's thanks for showing us those demos, Andrea. And I think it is an interesting example of how of the differences between vibe coding and agentic development. Visually, still differences, but not as obvious as what's going on behind the scenes. Obviously, a much more complicated a more complicated setup that you have done with agentic development, to be sure, than just asking Claude to build an HTML and JavaScript page for us, obviously. But still much, much faster than the way you and I were doing things a decade plus ago, for sure, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So there's still a tremendous amount of efficiencies and power built into this. That's really cool. As we wrap up, though, I want to come back to the security question, because this is a key difference between the Vibe Coded application and what we can build with the agents. So what advice do you have kind of for managers who are excited about the productivity gains of using AI tools, but who are worried about the security risks of giving AI agents like access to their code bases? And, you know, like what sort of tips would you give for building security into your agentic development process?
For once, have it on the top of the list in the prompt. Security first, you know?
Right.
Tell the agent that it has to check, that it has to have it in its mind, you know, the everything. Topmost security first, mm-hmm. and then everything else. That's number one. And then test it. Try to hack it, like, you know, the finished application.
Leave that human in the loop exploratory testing and security testing. I mean, it's great to have agents help you with these things and run simulations, but you still need to verify it yourself. Take the time to do that before
verify it, try to break it, get the QA and try mm-hmm. to break it, and maybe a security advisor if it's gonna go to production bigger.
Yeah.
Do it. You have to do it. And yeah, and if you're building chatbots, limit the access to what tools they have. Don't mm-hmm. open up, you know, your database. Don't give them permissions to delete the whole database.
Exactly.
Or to, build security gates before it reaches the agent. I don't know. So they don't give out the whole prompt for your company or everything. A lot could go wrong. There's so many angles everywhere. They
right.
can exploit everywhere. And nobody's checking.
And that's the problem if we move too fast.
That's the problem. Yeah.
That we get too excited by the confetti dropping in the application and we just push things out of production without doing this level of validation. Yeah. That's where we run into problems. I mean, I think the most important point with this, with any of these tools is that, you know, yes, the efficiency is awesome and we should absolutely be using it. It opens doors for us to build things that we didn't have maybe the time or the code syntax knowledge to do, you know, before we absolutely need to take advantage of the possibilities, the opportunities that AI tooling and agentic development open up for us. But we have to always remember that ultimately, you know, we as the humans, whether we are responsible for what we're deploying.
We are the owners. Yeah.
You know,
you are responsible.
In that meta example that we talked about, and no agents got fired because of that security loophole. I don't know if any humans got fired or not, but the humans were responsible for it, even if they were, you know, and maybe responsible by responsible because they weren't checking it, right? Because they let things go to production without human insight. So either the, you know, the technical staff who did that, or perhaps the executive staff who forced them to work that way, who said, like, you know, we want this completely automated from ideation to deployment to production. You know, a human somewhere along the chain made the decision that security was not important enough, right? And that could be handled after a problem occurs, right? So we have to always remember that with the great power that comes with these tools, the responsibility still remains with the humans.
Yeah. We still need to keep ownership and responsibility of what we do and why we do it. Again, yeah, AI did not get fired. They're still working, but yeah. Yeah,
exactly. We still keep the ownership and responsibility, but on the flip side of the coin, we should also make sure that we're still keeping the creativity in this too, because that's a fun part. That's what excites you, right, Andrea? Yeah. That's what excites all of us as engineers. Yeah. So
that's a fun part. Seeing these great big things that your head envisions come into reality in so quick. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's intoxicating.
Too much sometimes. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Awesome. Well, Andrea, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you sharing your expertise with us today on the Scaling Tech Podcast. It's also always been a pleasure for me to have you in our team at Agility Feed and WebRTC Ventures. So thank you for everything that you do. And thanks for being here today.
No, thank you for having me. Really, really fun.
Well, this was fun. We'll do it again with the next round of advancements in the technology, because I know you're watching these things closely and constantly learning. So we appreciate that. For those of you watching, to learn more about the type of work that Andrea and our teams do, check out agilityfeet.com and webrtc.ventures for our video-specific work. To see the complete show notes from all of our episodes on the Scaling Tech Podcast, visit us at scalingtechpod.com. And while you're there, give us a follow on the platform of your choice so you don't miss out on future episodes. So thanks for joining us for this episode of the Scaling Tech Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Scaling Tech Podcast. In addition to bringing the Scaling Tech Podcast to you, at Agility Feet, we help companies to build tech teams across Latin America that are truly theirs. We can help you scale with confidence, with everything from staff augmentation to establishing your own technical center of excellence through our Build, Operate, Transfer model. We can do that for you in Colombia, Panama, Mexico, or elsewhere in Latin America. So check us out at agilityfeet.com to learn more. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Scaling Tech Podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're enjoying this episode. We'll continue to bring you insightful conversations about engineering leadership and building technical teams. To see our past episodes, check out scalingtechpod.com.